You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Stugatz was trending yesterday, and he asked me, what is that? Why is that happening? Why am I trending? And the reason is, and I'm always expressing, although probably not enough, my gratitude for the audience, the reason this show has the value that it has to DraftKings and to sponsors and to others is not necessarily just because of the number of people listening, but because of the loyalty and pride that our audience takes in listening so much, spending so much time listening. So thank you to all of you who on Spotify Wrapped were showing everybody, I've listened to 80,000 minutes, or I saw somebody was like at 160,000 minutes, which is just, it's lunacy, the amount of time that some of you spend listening to this. And our gratitude is heartfelt from everyone except Stugatz, who doesn't know why he's trending yesterday.
Well, now that I know, thank you to everyone. We greatly appreciate it. Why wouldn't you and I be trending? Like the entire show, the Dan Le Batard Show with Stugatz. Why was it just me trending? I don't know what trending means. I don't know how to find it. I'm old. I have no idea. My wife said you're trending. I said, what does that mean? Like, I didn't know how to explain it to her.
Well, I don't really know how the trending algorithm works. It's targeted to certain people. Right. It's like targeted to your location. Stugatz, I have no idea why you're trending either. Mm. I will say, if you're listening to the show for over 100,000 hours, you are padding, or minutes, you're padding your stats. There's no way we put out that many minutes of the show in the last year. You're going back 2 years ago just to look at me, Louie, with your Spotify Wrapped. That's too many minutes.
And good on you.
We appreciate those look at me, Louis. We do not mock those.
I just don't
loyal
think it's possible. I just don't think that there's I mean, we do a lot of minutes of this show. 100,000 minutes. There's no way we've done it's that more, many
no,
shows.
I saw 160,000 minutes from somebody who won Moss tickets. Incidentally, as part of what we try to do to show you how grateful we are, December 10th, MossLeBatard.com. We've got a lot planned for you. A lot of people are working crazy and tirelessly to make sure that you feel how touched we are and that you feel our touch on this Saturday, December 10th. Mike, your DJ set here, I heard yesterday with the stage and the production on some of the stuff they're doing around the bands, your DJ set is longer than the ones that you have done. How much work do you have to do on your DJ set? And how rusty are you during the pandemic and stuff? Because have you done very much of this since Gronk and Shaq and the Super Bowl party?
Not a lot, but I've been keeping myself active, taking up coconut grooves, and I played 3 points. So, but I am putting a lot of work into it because I'm challenging myself by learning a new style of DJing. I've done one disco set in my life, and I want to kind of combine what it is I think I do best, which is open format, with some of the other things that I do pretty well, which is deep house and disco, because of the challenge. And I've really enjoyed diving into tracks. Yeah, I went for 90 minutes because it's 60 minutes. I'm just kind of just finding my way. And I want enough time to kind of change it if people aren't feeling it. It's always a weird group to play to because it's a bunch of dudes that are sports fans, and I'm not really sure how into the Bee Gees they are.
But they love you. I mean,
yeah, but I'm not going to be doing like gimmicky sounds. Like I've tried to take a different approach for every one of these because I don't want it to get stale. And this is a more ambitious thing. This is far more challenging. It's a lot harder to mix tracks like this than it is to match deep house, for example. So I've been working hard on it, been fine tuning it a little bit, been playing in my house, been trying to learn these tracks inside and out. I don't go in with like a set list though, because you want to see how it vibes. I just want to get familiar with it because it's more like a vinyl spinning type of thing, and those guys are really talented, and I'm not a vinyl spinner, and that's kind of what I have to train myself to do in the next 2 weeks. But it's going to be fun. I just wanted to play JM so you can sing along to and have a good time. And disco tends to put a smile on everybody's face, so that's what I'm hoping to do, and I'm taking it seriously.
MossLebatard.com is where it is that you go if you want to buy tickets that are affordable. We will have more music than that. December 10th, Wynwood Marketplace is where it is that we're doing it. Chris Whittingham brought up something, Stu Gatz, that I think is in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
He said that Joe Buck and Troy Aikman suggested that we need a new phrase besides in the hunt.
Hmm. Wow.
That in the hunt.
I mean, I love in the hunt. I got to be honest with
well,
you.
Well, you've in the mix. In the mix is the one that you like.
Yes.
But they are saying no more in the hunt. Every team in football right now is in the hunt except for the Houston Texans.
They're out. Yeah.
That's it. But that's
no
it.
Longer hunting.
But that.
Yes.
But that is basically it. Everyone else is in the hunt because everyone in that league is 4-7.
Including the cocaine-fueled Bears.
Yeah.
And the Colts and the Steelers are obviously the feature game on Monday Night Football, and the only way to sell that game is to put the two of them as loose appendages on the In the Hunt graphic. And so they showed the standings coming out of commercial break, and Troy Aikman was like, I mean, come on, guys. Can by next week we have another name for In the Hunt? But it's almost like it's almost standard that every NFL network that shows games puts that there. That it would almost be weird to see something else. It would be weird to kind of call it In the Mix or on the Precipice or something like that. It would be
on
kind
the
of,
precipice is terrible.
No one wants that.
That's
okay.
Terrible. Yeah. And how about Troy Aikman come up with it? I mean, he's asking the audience to come up with it.
No, he's
for
asking
him.
His production team.
Boy, oh, his production that team. Is, I mean, I would never do that.
That is rich coming from old. Look it up.
What about OLI?
I like that. If they just put OLI on the screen, not even outside looking in.
But
that's not in the hunt. That's outside looking in. You're not in the hunt if you're OLI.
Yeah, but you can be outside looking in and still be in the hunt, Dan. It just
means
you're not
outside looking in to the hunt.
Yes. You don't think it's possible?
I don't think that you can be. Put it on the poll, Whittingham. Can you be both outside looking in and in the hunt?
I follow Computer Cowboy on. He's from The Athletic. He puts out great NFL tiers. A lot of charts.
I threatened to kick his robot algorithm's ass once.
Yeah,
he got mad at me.
Yeah, I don't know what his stuff is, but it looks good, his charts. And what he has them kind of tiered up. And the group we're talking about, he calls possibly frisky. Should we like maybe
not
put
bad.
That?
It sounds
seems
a little sensual.
Yeah.
But like Dan, the Patriots are 6-5 right now, and they're not in the playoffs. They're on the outside looking in, but they're still in the hunt. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to convince you on this one. I mean, they're right there. They're not in, but they're right there.
The thing about possibly frisky is like if you go one step above that, is it like ready to get it on? Like I don't understand
his tiers are there's four teams in Super Bowl or bust. And then the next tier is other contenders, and then he has possibly frisky.
Mm.
Dolphins are in other contenders right now.
Wow, you're excited.
Oh, man, if they were in Super Bowl or bust, though.
Stu Gatz has been arguing that the Dolphins are too good.
I mean, I expect them to score. The offense is too good. And it's weird to see them be this good because we haven't seen them be this good in so long. But when you're supposed to blow out the Texans at home and you blow them out at home... And the other thing that it's I can't believe I'm saying this. When they don't score on offense, I am shocked they don't score on offense. And they've gone from this team that I've mocked pretty much my entire career to being the best team. I feel like the most exciting team in the NFL. I mean, it's so fun to watch them. The offense is near perfect.
You say that you expect them to score every time, and I am in the same place of being surprised every time there is an incompletion. And it is a weird, disorienting way after you've watched 20 years of football that's totally constipated, that is somewhere beyond impotent, to see it free-flowing like this. But Jessica, you brought up the phrase frisky, and the only time I've ever heard that phrase was the father of Richie Cunningham on Happy Days, an old, old man who, when he wanted to be sensual on American television in the 70s, dangerous and edgy, when he was talking about having sex with his wife. It's the only time I've heard someone actively use the phrase frisky. So you're right that it is a sensual phrase. It's just
thank you. I feel like I got no support for that. When I think of frisky, I think of cat food and I think of old people getting a little horny.
Are you talking about Tom Bosley?
I am. Is it Bosley? Yeah, I think that's his name.
His Mr. C. Is so yeah.
old. I mean, Jesse, the only time I've heard it, Jessica.
You've done Columbo, okay? Love so, Columbo. So be careful with calling our references old. However, we say frisky all the time in sports contexts. I feel like that's not one that's that crazy. It's not purely a sex based reference. It's we hear sports teams all the time described as frisky.
Do we?
It's sex based to me.
I'm telling
frisky.
You.
Frisky, really?
I think of a little kitty cat.
It's because of the food.
Little frisky kitty cat.
That sounds sexy.
Telling you, yeah, if you say it that way.
Little frisky kitty cat.
Did we come up with In the Hunt and a replacement? Are we setting it for the audience to come up with something better than In the Hunt? Because on the periphery or on the precipice is
Maximum. It's such a Whittingham term.
It's Maximum Whittingham, but I don't believe that it's helpful here in any way.
I also think precipice sounds sexual.
A little frisky.
Yeah.
Precipice?
Yeah.
Is it the nature of how the word sounds? Because there's nothing about the word or any context it's used in that is sexual whatsoever.
Say it slowly.
Precipice.
Yeah, man, that's a sex word.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a word, if anyone uttered it around or in or around sex, it'd be a turn off.
Probably what Witty does say when he's on the precipice.
I'm on the precipice. Yuck.
Totally says that.
At the height of letting go of any...
I'm on the precipice. I have arrived.
Oh, you had it in the act. I had it as he walks into the room before.
No,
I am on the
precipice
of having sex.
No, as it's happening, yes, in a very broadcaster
we're
voice.
Entering the threshold.
He pulls out a microphone.
He does pull out a mic.
One of those soccer mics with that.
Completion.
Fini.
Six months. 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Don Levitard.
I think I'd like to know when I'm going to die, because I sort of romanticize the idea of like living like you were dying when you're on a countdown clock. Imagine all the life experiences. Like I could go skydiving or Rocky Mountain climbing.
Stugatz.
Roy brings up a point, though. Like, Roy does bring up a point. Like you might be risking paralysis. That's
totally trampled my bit.
Yes.
Just totally trampled my
bit.
But
Mike, what if, God forbid, it says you're going to die in like a week? What if it says a week, though? Like, or 2 days or a month? I don't want to know that.
Well, then you just love deeper and speak sweeter and give forgiveness to those that you've been denying. Someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying.
Do you have more or is that it?
No, thank you guys for letting me go through that smoothly.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Do you feel like your knowledge of pop culture is starting to lag a little bit by this hiatus, this virtue signaling hiatus that you've taken?
He doesn't know about Cocaine Bear, so
I mean,
obviously.
You're missing out if you don't know about Cocaine Bear. Everyone's talking about it.
Tell me all about Cocaine Bear. I can't wait to hear it.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
It's the true story of a bear that's being made into a movie that went on a rampage after ingesting some cocaine. But the more interesting part to you as a fan of the show will be that when discussing it, Stugatz, we believe, had his phlegmiest moment in the history of the show. And it sounded, it went beyond, we think, I'm with Lewis on this one. You tell us whether you think this is worse than I'm with Lewis on this one.
Ron McGill would still tell us not to. to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep. Yeah. It's an entire sentence. Oh,
the look on Mike's face when he heard
recoiled.
That.
He recoiled in horror as if he was being attacked by a cocaine-fueled bear.
Ron McGill would still tell us not to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
Is it worse, Mike? In the hunt? It was a cocaine-fueled bear. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it's the death rattle on the last couple words that really gets me.
Yeah. Ron McGill would still tell us not to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
Dan's oh, Jesus. It's great.
I should have stopped.
Oh, words Jesus.
What?
Oh, Jesus.
Your conviction that you can plow through this, yes, that like you just got to keep talking and you can get to the other side is inexplicable.
Ron McGill would still tell us not to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear.
Oh, Jesus.
That little hiccup.
He still said sorry the in hiccup. The fluffy voice.
Yeah, the hiccup. I mean, Ron McGill would still tell us not to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, what the hell?
You can hear the phlegm getting to the part in the throat where it stops.
Ron McGill would still tell us not to run. It was a cocaine-fueled bear.
Oh, Jesus.
It hurts.
I know this isn't possible, but every time you play it, it seems like it gets worse. Like, I know it's a recording of the same bit of sound, but it feels like it's getting worse every time I hear it.
It was a cocaine-fueled bear. You hear something new every time.
You really do. It's a panoply of misery.
It was a cocaine-fueled bear.
A plan of what?
Time now for Mike Schur's daily stat of the day.
Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is your stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is your stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is your stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is your stat of the day.
I don't know if y'all saw this.
Uh-oh. Here he goes.
The Boston Celtics defeated the Miami Heat last night, 134-121.
Yeah, they're good.
Celtics were -9.5, covered easily. Interesting. It was the third straight game the Celtics have scored 130 or more points, according to a stat they showed on NBC Sports Boston last night. The last time the Celtics scored 130 or more in three straight games was March of 1968.
Wow.
Man.
Now, to give you some idea of how long ago that was, I looked this up. In the first of those three games, a 144-118 win, a rookie guard chipped in 11 points for the San Diego Rockets. That guard's name, Pat Riley.
Riles.
A rookie guard named Pat Riley chipped in 11 points for the San Diego Rockets. So the Boston Celtics ruining Pat Riley's day since March of 1968.
My favorite moment of last night's game was on the perimeter, Jason Tatum being guarded for one of Udonis Haslam's 9 minutes in the game.
Oh, that was so bad. I rarely feel pity for the Miami Heat, who I truly dislike. I felt bad. They put in Haslam, I think, to foul Tatum. And then Tatum just ran past him before he could foul him. He just blew past him so easily. That was the easiest layup of Jason Tatum's career. It made me actually feel pity for Udonis Haslam.
You are super excited about how well the Celtics are playing, correct? This seems like the most overwhelming version of this team, and it was plenty overwhelming the second half of last season.
Yeah, this is the best I've ever seen them look, at least since the original Big Three year. They had a lot of holes in their game, all of which, every single one of which, was infuriatingly exposed by Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and Draymond Green in the finals. They haven't, wouldn't say they filled all their holes. I'm not smart enough about basketball analysis to know if they filled all their holes. They filled a lot of their holes. Their second unit is so much better. They had no wings who could score last year off the bench. And so every time Tatum and Jaylen Brown went out, They just got run off the court. They now have an entire second unit that's pretty competent and can score and create and give their starters rest. their ball handling has improved significantly, partly because they got Malcolm Brogdon and partly because Tatum just appears to have worked really hard on his dribbling on the offseason. Jaylen Brown's still iffy. I still don't trust. He had 6 turnovers last night. I don't entirely trust him. But Brogdon makes an enormous difference. And by the way, they're doing all this without Time Lord, who isn't going to come back until Christmas. It's pretty exciting to be a Celtics fan right now. Like, they don't seem to have a lot of weaknesses. They're not as locked in defensively as they were last year, but they also don't have to be, because they're off to a historically good start offensively.
But they will be when Williams comes back.
That's what you'd have to assume also, is that the defense, the interior defense especially, the teams they've lost to the Bulls twice and they've lost to Cleveland twice in overtime. So the Bulls are the only team that's beaten them in regulation. And the Bulls wins, if you look at those box scores, it's like Vucevic has like 27 rebounds. Like, they get hammered on the boards if there's a really good rebounding 4 or 5, that's where they can run into trouble because they don't have Time Lord to clean up the paint. But you would assume that when he gets back, they're giving up like 110 points a game or something, or 115 or something. You would assume that that would go down significantly.
They're middle of the pack defensively in terms of points giving up per game. But when you score, to your point, when you're scoring 125 plus every single night, does it really matter? And Derek White has been exceptional for the Celtics. He has been really, really good, Mike.
He is the other guy who's taken this weird leap. Like, they talked a lot in the offseason, I guess, about having him play with more confidence, and he looks way more confident. Like, he's not flinching when he's open for three. He's driving a lot more. He's getting fouled a lot more. He's taking contact. Like, Miami last night shot 52-45-100. That was their shooting line, and they lost by 13. Like, they Strus, Robinson, someone named Highsmith, and Gabe Vincent were like 12 of 21 from three, and they lost by 13. Like, that's the thing, is no one can match them currently offensively. So I think that there's a little less pressure on them to like play every defensive possession as intensely as they can. By the way, what is the strategy here with Kyle Lowry? Mike Ryan, what are we thinking here? Lead the league in minutes? Is that the best strategy for Kyle Lowry? I don't know that that's the best strategy to employ.
I only have
a 38-year-old who's not any good.
I only have so much fan width, and I cannot devote any more to a Kyle Lowry team playing this many minutes. I've moved on to college hoops.
Kind of has to, though, Mike. I mean,
such a cop out. I've listened to you rant about the Heat and how great the Heat are for years now.
Yeah,
now the year where the Celtics are dominating, you're like, well, no, I don't have time for that.
I mean, I really don't, though. I told you what I thought about this team entering the season. I told you what I thought during parts of the season.
10 games in, you said, go ahead and tank. You've given up.
Yeah. No, I think they haven't addressed the roster. He's mentioning all the improvements that Boston has made. That's a team that made it to the NBA Finals, and they still tweaked their roster.
And the Heat made none.
Miami failed to do so, and the plan was, let's just get older together. And it's not working out.
But
and
Bam has been great. Jimmy Butler didn't play last night, and Bam, they are elite defensively still when Bam... when Bam is on the court, and offensively, he's gotten better.
Guys, they're missing their best player. It's not just last night. He hasn't been there that often. And so, like, the Heat are going to be fine if Jimmy Butler is fine.
I don't think there's nothing from this season that would be evidence that they're going to be fine when Jimmy Butler gets there. Jimmy Butler was there at times, and they weren't playing their best ball either. I think that they absolutely have to make a move. And if they're going to keep rolling out with the status quo, I'm going to keep devoting my attention other places. I'm not at all bullish on them. And yes, it times up with Boston being better, but this is really more of a Miami Heat thing than it is a Boston thing.
Mike, I'm interested, as a Celtic fan, are you more concerned about the Bucks or the Nets? Because I'm telling you, the Nets, if they're healthy, going to be a problem. Big problem.
I am concerned about the Bucks because they're great, and they're also playing. They're playing without Middleton, and they're right behind the Celtics. So I think they're the other great team in the East. But this is the problem. I texted your friend Amin Al-Hassan last night out of frustration in the first half, because the Heat run one play. They run, Bam brings the ball up. They run a high pick and roll for Hero or Max Strus, and then that person either takes a three, drives, and kicks or hits a floater. And I was losing my mind because they were running that play over and over and over again. And then on defense, they were running that stupid, petty college zone thing that they do. And the Celtics momentarily, for some reason, forgot how to attack a zone in the NBA.
You hate
and it was working. It was like 48-48. And I was furiously texting Amin and saying, explain to me what's going on in this game. Please, I beg you. I can't take this anymore. And then I had another realization, which is if I care this much about a regular season NBA game in November, I'm going to have a heart attack and die. And I need to cool it. So I'm officially announcing that I'm cooling it a little on worrying about the Nets and worrying about the Heat and worrying about the Bucks. I'm just going to try to enjoy the NBA season at least until April, and then I will go back into the heart attack zone that I was in last night in the first half.
I'm sorry I'm not giving you the tears that you're looking for. Just know that what you're seeing in me is resignation. I didn't watch a second of the game. I was at Miami Rutgers. I don't like this Heat team right now. They need to thoroughly change things.
It's shocking to hear you having given up. It's a quarter of the way through the season and you've given up.
They're not going to win anything. They may make the playoffs, probably a play-in battle if the roster stays status quo. Do you disagree?
I just don't think it will stay status quo. I don't know why you'd assume that it'll stay status quo.
I'll be back in when they do that. And until then, though, it seems like a gigantic waste of time, does it not?
No.
Jeremy Tache just called you gutless in the chat.
No. Okay.
No, that works. Wow. Jeremy, that banter Jember. That banter works when we have a good team. You can't be throwing that out when you have a bad team.
Mike, are you in or not? You're a Heat fan? Like, you know, through good times, through bad times?
With this unit? No, I'm not in. With this unit, they need to...
You can't bail on your team because of Kyle Lowry? Like, what are you doing?
Well, they bailed on me when they put Kyle Lowry on this team.
One other thing that I wanted to bring up with Mike Schur, going back to the conversation we had with David Sampson in the local hour, LeBron James has actually achieved what he was trying to achieve at the end of yesterday's press conference, when after the game he waited for reporters to ask him and they never did, and he wondered, why is it that no one has asked me about Jerry Jones? Why have none of you asked me? When Kyrie Irving is in trouble, you ask me about Kyrie Irving, and that one makes sense because he's a fellow basketball player who used to be a teammate, but he has applied pressure by doing this because now it's a conversation again, Mike. People are talking about Jerry Jones being in that photograph from 1957, racist Arkansas. And I'm just curious what you make of the most recent development and everything happening with that Jerry Jones story and the Washington Post reporting on how poorly he has done with minority hires.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little unfair of LeBron. Like, it's a little bit of a cheap move. I get why he's doing it, because he has a point to make. But forget about that, I guess. The thing with Jerry Jones was, like, to me, I don't know if how much you've covered this or haven't covered this. I mean, was anyone shocked by this? He's a billion years old. He grew up in a segregated state. Like, it's neither surprising nor defining in terms of what kind of person he is. That was the life he was leading when he was 15 and living in Arkansas, wherever the hell he was. There are some things I think that are worth thinking about and discussing that we should keep thinking about and discussing. Number one, he said he went because he was curious, right? Which is definitely a quality I associate with Jerry Jones. Just rampant intellectual curiosity. That's what I think of. The thing he said was, it was, I don't, oh wait, hold on. I wrote it down. He said, I didn't know at the time the monumental event really that was going on. I'm sure glad we're a long way from that. I am. That would remind me, just continue to do everything we can to not have those kinds of things happen. That was what he said about the event that he witnessed, which was the attempt to stop the desegregation of his schools. Quick tip for people being caught racist in old photos. You want to forcefully propel yourself away from the racist thing, right? You want to say things like, you know, those demonstrations were despicable and hurtful, and I'm so sorry to the men and women who suffered at the hands of that display of hate, whatever, something like that. But what he said was, I'm sure glad that we're a long way from that, which is what you say about, a traffic jam or when Stu Gatz tries to talk with phlegm in his throat.
Or the Cowboys' last Super Bowl.
Yeah, like, exactly. So we should continue to do everything we can to not have those kinds of things happen isn't exactly... Like, yes, I agree, Jerry. We should definitely try not to have segregated schools again. Like, I've never understood this about this guy. Does he have a publicist that he ignores? Does he, like, why did he insist on doing his own press conferences all the time? And he's terrible at giving them. Like, he's terrible at, and the reason that we keep, like, wondering about him is because he's so bad at being straightforward and saying things that you should say in these moments. And so, yeah, LeBron's right. We should keep asking these questions of everybody. Like, when it's not only revealed that he was there, but now when he talks about it, it's in this sort of like mealy-mouthed way where he doesn't really address the issue or talk about it like it's a serious thing. And the Post is right. Like, the Cowboys have never had a black head coach. They're one of only a half a dozen or so teams who have never had a black head coach. There are people high up in his organization who are of African American descent, but since Jerry Jones took over 30 years ago, they've had two black coordinators. Like, it's like he's uniquely bad at doing the sort of even optics based things that you should do if you're him. And the whole thing he runs the league. He and Robert Kraft run the league, and it's so embarrassing to the league to have that guy be caught in that situation, regardless of he can say everything he wants about, no, I do this and I do this and I'm proud of my track record. But he's just so uniquely bad at explaining his way out of these moments. I just don't understand why. I don't know. Someone has to get to him and say, like, hey, can we give you a publicist?
Well, I don't think he has to, though, because, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he is, like you said, he basically runs one of the biggest sporting leagues in the world. Like, he can get away with having these weak responses and no one can hold him accountable to it. So he just couldn't go out and say what he wants without a publicist to be like, hey, this is maybe not the right thing to say here.
But when Scherr says, does he have a publicist? He had one and he was fired or let go because he was peeping on cheerleaders in the locker room.
That's right.
Yeah. Down ripple. Yeah.
And beyond that, though, Mike, he is clearly someone who philosophically just wants to be at the center of the attention. And I don't mean that as even disparagement. He just shows again and again that he likes being the ringleader of the circus and doesn't care what the criticisms are, doesn't care what you think about him doing press conferences or what he says in those press conferences. It's a billionaire's toy, and he treats it as such, and he doesn't feel like he needs the advice of anybody. He's going to say and do what he wants always for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Is that he has the thirst for fame that like rock stars have, I think, where it doesn't matter what's happening, what the subject matter is. You know, I believe I heard Sally Jenkins say when you interviewed her the other day about this, that they asked every owner to comment on this story. He was the only one who said yes. It's like he he wakes up in the morning and is like, where is someone who wants to listen to me? Where is that person? And how quickly can I get in front of that person? And that's not an attractive quality in anyone, I don't think. I say that literally as I'm at a microphone doing something I do daily. But in my defense, I signed a contract, a Scientology S billionaire contract that has very significant punishment if I disobey.
Mike, good talking to you. Thank you, sir. And don't ever disobey.
Dan Le Batard.
Well, Charlie sent, Charlie, as far as I know, so just Charlie's title in my
Are you going to say anything?
Stugatz.
How familiar were you at the time with Chewbacca? Like, how your upbringing had how much Chewbacca in it?
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Hello, Brandy. Thank you for being on with us. First question before we get into why it is that you're on with us. Are you the owner of the most famous goal in the history of American soccer?
I don't know if I own that right. I know I have a goal that was absolutely monumental and changed the outcome of a game. So I'll take that. But I think Christian Pulisic scored a pretty immense goal yesterday. So let's say everybody gets to share in both of those goals.
How did it change your life immediately? Like in what are the most seismic ways that changed your life?
Well, this morning I'm talking to you, so I wouldn't have the opportunity to be in your presence and for us to talk about the game on such a great level. And, you know, honestly, to have partnerships like the one that I have with Frito-Lay and that they have with U.S. Soccer Foundation, and the fact that they are impacting communities across this country of young people so that they can have access to the game is incredible. And so for me, I think that goal that I happened to score, but really was a team effort, collective throughout the World Cup, created a platform for all of us to use soccer as a vehicle for better and for access and for equality and inclusion across our landscape.
When you talk about access, though, when you were at Davis Junior High School, right, there there was not a girls' soccer team, correct? You had to play on the boys' soccer team, yes?
Well, no, technically it was the co-ed team that only had boys. So, yeah.
And
call it what you like.
Okay. So you were the only girl on the team, though, correct?
When I came to the school, there was about four girls that I played soccer with that we all wanted to participate, and we all came out at the same time. And there was only boys out there. And the coach asked us what we were doing there. And we said we wanted to play on the team or at least have a tryout. And he kind of gave us the up and down look and said, well, this really isn't for you. And luckily, one of my good friends, who is still to this day one of my good friends, Stephen Robertson, said, coach, you should watch them play. They're pretty good. And so with that advocacy he gave, and I think that's really, again, what we're talking about. When you have advocacy and you have allies, you know, it makes barriers to entry a little bit less and opportunity greater.
What are the landmarks you would point to and how that shaped you? Just playing high school soccer against boys shaped you how?
Well, actually, I think just playing the game shaped me in so many ways. Again, and this is why this initiative with the U.S. Soccer Foundation is truly, and Frito-Lay All-In Initiative is truly, I think, immense in nature, because I learned not only things about myself, whether that would be determination, grit, a healthy mindset. It also gave me a greater perspective of that I am one amongst a team, and that my contribution should not be heavier than anybody else's, nor should I be the most important thing. So I think there's a lot of lessons that our young people learn through collective team sports that we just don't get other places. And when it comes down to the pressure moments, teaching young people that it's okay sometimes that we don't get it right, that we fall down, we have to get back up, that there are people who support us, that believe in us. And sometimes you're going to get cut from the team, and sometimes you're going to sit on the bench, and sometimes you're going to score the winning goal. And all of those things are really valuable. And I would say there's not one of those lessons that for me has been more important than the other.
When you mentioned determination and grit, when you were at Davis Junior High School, did you have to be tougher than the boys?
I don't think I had to be, but I think I was. That was pretty much in me. I think I had this competitiveness that just existed from the beginning. And I loved a challenge and I loved to compete. And I think sometimes, especially for girls, those two words get a little bit of a negative connotation. And I think last night when we were out in Pico Rivera for our All-In Initiative with about 250 young soccer players, there was girls and boys. And I think the idea of inclusion was absolutely seen. We have two young players that play for U.S. soccer's national teams at the young level and also at the full level that play with boys every day. And so I think when we when we get those two groups together and they see that there's value in each one, and maybe it looks different than the other, then we have a great opportunity for even more success than when we're separate.
Where does the $600,000 donation go with the All In with Frito-Lay initiative? How is that money being spent, and how do you see it moving, moving soccer and moving the participation of young people closer to access?
Well, I think what you'll see in the model is that we're going to influence coaches. More than 1,000 coaches will be trained, educated, given resources, given equipment, so that they can have the proper training so that they can go out and be great role models. And then when they get to those parks and those fields, the 30,000 or more kids that we will influence will now have people who are knowledgeable, who care about what they're doing, who want to make a difference in the lives of these kids, who have the proper training to do so. And now what I told the kids is the real byproduct of this, Dan, is that they then will become the coaches and the mentors for the younger kids. And now the ripple continues to go outward. And it's not just we say, okay, it was a $600,000 donation. It was we impacted tens of thousands of lives, and it's not just this generation, it will be the generation after and after and after.
Are you amazed, given where you were at the time that you made the goal, that we are now in a time, it took way too long to get to pay equity, to get to this U.S. World Cup with the men also being money for the women?
Well, of course. I mean, I think we were highly exhausted prior to the signing of the CBA, because for four decades we've been talking about the power of women in sports, the power of women in business, the power of women just to impact communities, not just their households, and what contributions they can make. And so, yeah, it was slow going. And yes, the conversations were exhausting, but look at what we're doing. And I think, you know, just to be in the present is really important. We need to know where we came from and how we got here. But what we can do going forward with initiatives like the All In Initiative is truly the purpose. And that's the drive. And that's absolutely what gets me excited about what soccer can do. It is absolutely a vehicle for change. And I am proud to be on the bandwagon.
What's the most moved you get by someone being moved by being in your presence?
I'm overwhelmed every time and honestly humbled, because I saw myself in all of those kids last night. You know, the ball is just brings such joy and delight to me every time I see it roll. It comes my way. I literally sometimes will have an event and I'll have a soccer ball with me. I'll be walking through an airport and I pass it to someone and they pass it back. And now all of a sudden we've made a connection. Our eyes meet, we smile. Like, to me, soccer speaks all languages. It doesn't always look the same and it always isn't played with the same tactics, but people can rejoice in the beauty and the essence of the poetry and the grace of the game and the athleticism and the power and the strength of the players. And really that it brings us all together in a way that nothing else can, and it stops wars and it stops fighting, and we can really sit together and that to me is, again, what we're trying to provide, an opportunity to be together, to share the game, to have access for all.
But how about young girls and the way that you move them as an icon? You keep making the conversation. I know this. I've heard you interviewed enough to know you're going to make it about team, and you don't want the eye, but you are an icon. This is not up for dispute. And I'm guessing that when you're with 250 kids, that there are many girls and boys, but many girls that you've given permission to yeah, you can do this too. I did it first.
Honestly, Dan, I think I appreciate that. And I think there is a connection when I do meet girls. Like last night, we had 10, I don't know, we had 30 girls out there last night. And the beauty of it was that I could look them in the eye and I can say, hey, I can give them some tips. I can give them a high five. I can say, you can do this. This is absolutely for you. But honestly, I think it's the interaction that I see them have with their peers, and those being males as well as females, and them feeling the confidence to be in that space, That to me is really the most important. I gave more autographs to boys last night than I did to girls. And that's not to say that the girls weren't impacted, but the fact that now it's like, there's this comfort and this honest acceptance that we belong in the space together is really, it's really phenomenal. And I do feel proud. And I do feel that part of my contribution made that happen.
Again, I will tell the people Frito-Lay is teaming up with Brandi Chastain for the All In with Frito-Lay initiative. It's in partnership with the U.S. Soccer Foundation at $600,000, a donation to fuel the initiative. Brandi, appreciate your time, appreciate your work. And last question, real quick question on the way out. Where's the sports bra? Where is it?
Right behind me. It's right there.
Okay, there it is. Good talking to you, Brandi. Thank you for the time.
All right, take care, you guys. Thank you, Dan.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.